Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to it. We got Luke Cage coming up in just a few days from this recording.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, hey. Quit jumping the gun, buddy. Just get your audio queued up. I'll do me.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of Breaking the Panel, everything from the back bins to the big screen and everything in between. I'm one of your hosts, Brian Ibbett, and you're going to marvel at the rest of the hosts on today's lineup. First off, we've got a guy who's, you know, all about the image, Mr. Charles McFall.
Nice. You gave me one of the good comics. Thank you, sir.
Over here, the dark horse in the running is Mr. Paul Klotz.
Hey,
that's perfect.
And the guy who always provides us with dynamite entertainment, Mr. Chris Wisdom.
I can't believe you gave me dynamite. I mean, I get Ash, I guess. Evil Dead, I get Ghostbusters, but come on, DC, the Brain Supreme.
Yeah, I didn't want to tell people that you ran on direct current, which is the only way I could figure to work that one in.
I thought it worked well because I haven't heard of Dynamite all that much, just like people haven't heard of Chris Wisdom.
Oh, jeez. Already out of the gate.
Out of the gate. Now, we do have some audio. We do have some audio to play today that I just realized that I need to pull up on my phone. So we'll jump ahead to our first headline, because if I don't pull up on my phone, then nobody else gets to hear it but us in the recording. And that's not fair, right? That's not nice. So if you guys want to go on with this first headline, I will get our phone call ready.
Well, there's strange rumors afoot, or not rumors, actually. It's been confirmed from an interview with none other than Mr. Benedict Cumberbatch that Doctor Strange is going to appear in Infinity War.
Wow.
He was interviewed and he made a comment they asked him what was next in line for Strange. And he said, well, trying to find a way to align my schedule with, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, and you know, the other Avengers actors. So, yeah, I mean, it's not an outright announcement. It's not coming straight from Marvel, but he pretty much confirmed that he'll be in Infinity War.
Which makes sense, because, I mean, it's, you know, on a cosmic scale, you do have to have a guy who can travel dimensions and, you know, go into the mystic world and that sort of thing. It seems like a natural fit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I still maintain that the Eye of Agmotto is going to end up being one of the Infinity Gems. So he's got to be in it.
Plus, if
you look back at what the hubbub from last summer, I mean, what'd they say? 68 characters are going to be in it. And if you don't have Doctor Strange,
exactly.
It's a little harder.
Yeah, it's supposed to be crazy, right? I mean, Infinity War in the comics was this massive thing where they pulled every single character into it. I mean, kind of like Civil War, but obviously they couldn't do that with the X-Men and everything last time, the Fantastic Four and stuff. But for Infinity War, I mean, by that time, we're going to be having Doctor Strange. We're going to have Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Does Captain Marvel and Black Panther come in before or after that? Black Panther comes in before Captain Marvel comes in after, right?
Yes.
I think that's correct. I'm pretty sure Captain Marvel will probably be introduced in these films, is my take.
Probably. Yeah, it would make the most sense, too, for like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 to introduce Captain Marvel, I think. But yeah, wouldn't that be perfect?
Yeah, that would be the right way to do it. Yeah,
so makes sense. And geez, Marvel, for what they did with Civil War, not having it get crushed under the weight of all of those characters, I'm hoping that they do that just on a grander scale for Infinity War and make it feel like, all right, every character really got their time to shine. Nobody felt like, well, here's Daredevil in the background just waving at the camera, you know, just to kind of make sure that he shows up. But it's cool the way that they've had everybody set up in Civil War, and I'm hoping they can do the same thing for Infinity War.
Are you guys as amped up as I am for, I mean, presumably the Black Order is going to be in this, right?
Oh, God, that'd be cool.
I don't know that it... because that's, so, I mean, you're talking 20 years after, as far as Marvel continuity. I mean, that's something 20 years after. That's, I don't know that they're,
but do you think that's the way that they'll go?
They could, and that would be cool.
It could just be Thanos and Chitauri, you know?
To that.
We know it's definitely Thanos.
Well, yeah, of course.
Right, but that seems so empty. You know what I mean?
Especially if they're just going to reuse the Chitauri again.
You just crushed my hopes and dreams, Chris. I was really hoping. You know, because they mentioned that the Russo brothers were joking when they said there are 68 characters. They had to come out and clarify that after the fact.
Oh, they did? Yeah. Okay, I thought that they was did. Real.
But then a month later, that same article or that same story was broached again. Yeah.
It's really only going to be 61.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Portman's out. Paltrow's out.
There's going to be a lot of characters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brian, I absolutely agree with what you were saying about Civil War and how that film could have easily been bogged down because of the number of characters.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. Yeah. And the thing that blew me away about that movie, and I still talk about this when I talk to people about Civil War, is the fact that everybody got their moment in the sun and it was great. And everybody nobody felt pigeonholed. Nobody felt held back. Everybody got their moment and you didn't need, you know, obviously the main characters got the bulk of the film, but everybody got a chance and it was great and nothing felt forced and nothing felt like, you know, just boxed in, and it was great.
For sure.
If they can capture that again, we are in for a ride.
Yeah. And, you know, based on the size of Infinity War, it could be Civil War times two, you know, it could be double the number of characters that we saw in that. We're going to have Hulk back in there. Yeah. We're going to have Thor back in there. And then everybody else that gets introduced over the next year of movies. Mantis, presumably, right? If she's getting added to Guardians of the Galaxy 2, then we'll see her in there as well.
We know, you mentioned Portman. You're joking. Portman's out. Interestingly enough, Jean Reno, who was in The Professional, right? He's going to be in this as the Grey Gargoyle.
Oh, really? Is that confirmed? Yeah.
No, but that'd be so fucking badass.
Oh, God, I didn't know that. So badass. This is pure jubilation you're hearing from me. Like, this is legitimate. You just blew my mind.
I should be the casting director, is all I'm saying. I would shut up, charge me three times as much if he's going to be in it. Like, he would be the perfect Grey Gargoyle, his age.
Jean Reno would be great as any character out of that. I think he's always fantastic. Grey Gargoyle, I think, was introduced in Fantastic Four comics, so Sony might have that business locked up.
I was so excited. Wow.
Maybe they have the
Grey
Gargoyle, but not a
Grey. Not a Grey. Grayish gargoyle. Yeah.
The eggshell gargoyle.
You know, that leads us perfectly into our next story, talking about Sony and talking about the popularity of Civil War and Avengers and things like that. You know, Sony's been kind of sitting there on the sidelines. Obviously, they're sharing Spider-Man with Marvel. They don't have James Bond anymore. There's, you know, questions as whether Ghostbusters is going to turn into a franchise, and they kind of like seeing what DC's doing. They kind of like seeing what Marvel's doing with the cinematic universe, and they want to do that themselves, and they're hoping they can do it with Valiant Comics. Hence why I brought in all those comic companies at the start of the show. Now, I've read Image. I've read Dark Horse.
Yes.
I don't know. I can't remember if I've read any of the Valiant comic stuff, but Harbinger is going to be the first of five films that they're going to be setting up for this Valiant Comics movie universe, or the VCMU, you know, as we're going to commonly call it, I'm sure. Bloodshot is going to be the second film, but he'll be introduced in the Harbinger film. Harbinger is about a group of teenage outcasts with superpowers known as the Harbingers, and it's going to focus on the main character, Peter Stanchek, who is a telekinetic. Bloodshot's a super soldier who was given nanotechnological powers after being mortally wounded. He's going to be the villain of the first film before starring in his spinoff. And they're also considering Hardcore, Livewire, Generation Zero, and Faith, the plus-size heroine who became a phenomenon, in quotation marks, earlier this year.
And they're supposed to, the article I read also said they'll be culminating in the Harbinger War. something like that. I think it was called, which would kind of be like the Civil War for Marvel. Okay. I've read some of these as a young teen. I mean, Bloodshot, Harbinger, Hardcore, and Livewire. I've touched on, but I could not tell you much of anything about them. Yeah. You know, I got into it when who produced Savage Dragon and Wildcats?
That was an Image.
Image, yeah. So yeah, you did give me the right one. When Image first, when was it Jim Lee?
Mm-hmm.
He spun out of Marvel, started Image.
Yep, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee. It was all creator owned, and so you had all these big names that came out of Marvel, came out of DC, and started their own comic company.
So I
Pouches and his Merry Band.
What's that?
Captain Pouches and his Merry Band. Yeah, I won't speak his name, but
you know it. But his initials are RL. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not talking about Goosebumps either.
Nah, I was about to say that. So it was interesting. So I did expand my horizons very briefly and got in some Valiant comics, which always confused me that Prince Valiant is DC, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But Valiant is a whole different company. It's like, wait. That doesn't make sense.
Well, hey, it's just like Captain Marvel being a DC character.
Yeah.
Oh, and a Marvel character. Shazam. Yeah.
No, that's a DC character.
Damn it.
I had limited experience with Valiant just because Archer and Armstrong was one I remember actually liking. All the others just seemed like facsimiles of something that was in another production house, so I never really got into them. And the thing that I always remembered about Valiant comics in the 90s was, as much as Marvel and DC leaned on chromium covers and those special covers, that is like all Valiant comics did for the longest time.
So right. Now I'm looking at these and I totally remember seeing these all in the hate to say it, the dollar bins. X-Men of War.
I don't think there was a month in 1996 that Bloodshot and Shadow Man,
right?
Yeah, and those guys didn't have some metallic cover. That was just
but
crazy.
Here's what I am excited about is that we're going to get another dive into another comic universe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's always fun for me.
Totally.
The thing where they may actually have an advantage over Marvel and DC is the guys over at DC Comics always talk about it when we talk about BVS, is the expectations game.
Right. And
you're going into this with little to no expectations.
Right. So along those lines, for me, that would have been the Joker. Crap, I just lost the alternate heroes universe in DC. The big blue guy, freaking Joker.
Watchmen?
The Watchmen, okay. Thank you. Yeah. I knew nothing. I just totally had a point.
And you're thinking the comedian, right?
The comedian. I apologize. Yes, I am thinking of the comedian. And I did not know who the Watchmen were before that movie came out. So I had zero expectation. Went in the first time I saw the movie, I did not know what to make of it. The second, third time, I loved the crap out of it. You know, and then later found out, oh, they're in this universe. I can find out more about them and read this book. So the zero expectation game is very exciting to me because we won't have that lead up to the panel of, well, it's a fine argument, but we won't have that. Well, it's not my Harbinger. Like, who? What?
Right. Who yeah. Are you? Yeah. There are going to be a lot of people saying, well, this isn't the way it was in the comics.
I'm sure somebody will. It just won't be on our panel.
Right.
So I'm going to choose to be the wet blanket here.
Okay.
I'm going to point out the fact that the industry is pretty saturated right now with comic book properties, and that all the major studios have comic book properties, and a couple of those major studios continually fall on their face with these comic book properties. And I admire that they're trying to go the route of some unexplored territory with characters that are, you know, that haven't been, you know, reiterated a million times in media, but I worry for Sony. I think this is going to blow up in their face, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they'll learn from their partnership with Marvel.
When we get to the point where we see some trailers and stuff, maybe it'll be awesome and, you know, I'll be blown away. But the thing is, I really feel like this is a tough sell. It's tough to sell a brand new comic universe when you have, you know, the two biggest names in comic books for the last 50 plus years. They both have, you know, differing levels of successful, you know, film franchises that are in interrelated worlds right now. And then they also both have television worlds that are going on right now. The one's technically part of the other one, but, you know. Anyways, the point is Marvel and DC have a big footprint in the market right now for films and television for comic book related content. So I really think this is a tough market to try to sell that into.
Well, I mean, to wring out your wet blanket, I would say that that argument would have been the same one in the 1990s when Valiant Comics came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their market share and they stuck around, albeit to a lesser degree. Now, where I will agree with you is that Sony itself on that PlayStation platform just hasn't had a great success yet with its comic properties. I mean, Powers, it got a season 2, correct? But then that was when it got canceled.
Yeah.
And I could not get, I'm still in the first half of season 1. I just, like, I liked the comic. I just can't get into the show that much. So.
Yeah. It has its ups and downs. I don't know. I could be wrong. You know, I'm not the kind of person who ever tries to say that I'm always right, but my gut tells me that this is gonna fizzle out on them, and it's rough.
But you know what? It won't be to the tune of $800 million production either. So
no,
they can afford to be experimental with these and sure, take a chance or risk.
Some would argue that they have to. Like it's now or never for them.
Yeah,
I would love the whole Deadpool. Route of here's a minuscule in relation to everything else. Here's a minuscule amount of money. Go. And
yeah,
they did what they could with some love and passion. It worked for them. It was a gamble, but it worked. All I'm saying is like, here's a small amount of money. Go and do Harbinger. And if it works, it works.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, it does. It's the BBC model. Here's nothing. And you get 3 episodes. Go.
Yeah, there's no rabid fan base for Valiant Comics. I mean, at all.
Yeah. Ooh, Exo Man of War. Give me Iron Man without a face shield.
I mean, I think that's the elephant in the room is that Valiant Comics might still be around, but nobody talks about them. I mean,
well, we are, Paul.
Well, we are right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are some comic properties out there right now that absolutely deserve to get, you know, film adaptations. Saga, even though I haven't read it yet, I've heard nothing but like amazing, amazing reviews. There's a lot of, you know, stuff out there from third party publishers. I say third party, they're, you know, they're publishers, but they're just not the two mainstream ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there that could get either the TV or movie treatment right now and could do well. I mean, there's definitely space out there for another Walking Dead type thing, not necessarily a zombie show. I'm saying there's room for someone to take a popular but off the beaten path book and run with it.
Kind of like Preacher. I've been telling you guys to go watch because that was killer.
Yeah,
that
was awesome. It really was killer. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for giving me an opportunity to bring it up again because I love talking about Preacher.
Couldn't go a week without it.
I'm going to point out that Tick got picked up for a full season on Amazon, so somebody's doing that. But.
Awesome.
Oh, good.
So, interesting. I got to say, though, this is interesting that they're going to try, or at least they're announcing they're going to try. We'll see what happens. And, you know, maybe we'll get some good stuff. There's definitely been a few movies in the past that I've watched and enjoyed, and only later found out they were based on a third-party publisher comic book. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, that was a comic book movie? I had no idea. You know, what else is interesting about this is these two headlines directly are being posted on our Facebook page by me. I just randomly came across them, thought these were great articles, great experiences. Didn't tell you guys, just scheduled them for posting. And here it is, the first two that y'all pick up individually, Klotz and Ibit,
nice.
Were ones that we were posting on our page. So we're all on that same, oh, let's see what we can find, path. It's really cool. Now, you know what is fun? What is always fun that we can count on every month is Loot Crate. And we have the newest box to tell you about. It's coming up for October. You can start ordering it now up until the 19th of the month, of course. But that chill running up your spine isn't your imagination. It's Loot Crate's October theme. Harbor. I don't do horror very well. That's my best scary voice.
Oh, my God.
I never grew up watching this stuff. I never cared about horror, so I don't do horror very well. But we're talking over 40 years of creepy, campy, bloody icons and putting them in this month's crate. Channel your best final girl with items from The Walking Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Halloween. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific or midnight Eastern to subscribe and receive this month's crate, and it's over. So make sure you go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up. Enter code giant-size-team-up to save $1 million or three off of any subscription.
One of the two, and it'll be decided on checkout.
Yeah, it's the RNGesus, man. It'll figure it out for you on checkout.
It's randomized at each checkout. You hit the button, and then you'll find out your discount.
So, are you guys excited about this horror theme of Halloween?
I can't believe that you never got into horror as a kid, like any of it, like Friday the 13th or...
I grew up a preacher's kid. I did not even get exposed to this stuff until later in life. And here's the thing, when I did get exposed to it, I go to movies to dive into the universe you created. I'll play by your rules, but when you break your own rules, it breaks the movie for me. And I actually watched the reboot of Friday the 13th. I can't remember the actor's name, but he was in The Watchmen as well, and I really liked him. But he was the new Freddy, and I followed him. All right, this is kind of cool. I get it.
Friday the 13th or Freddy? Which one are you talking about?
Oh my God,
Freddy. Nightmare on Elm Street. Sorry, Nightmare on Elm Street. Dude, I just told you I didn't get into this stuff. So
okay, Jackie Earl Haley is the guy you're talking about.
Jackie Earl Haley. Like, he's so cool. I love him, man. He was in The Human Target, which was a great. It was a cheesy TV show, but it was fun. It was a comic book show.
I'm sure that Charles's favorite horror movie was John Carpenter's Cousin Eddie, based on that Judas Priest property.
Is that the one where he's stuck in the Iron Maiden?
Yeah. Is that the one where John Carpenter's on Mars writing it? See, I actually knew enough to make that joke. All right. But no, The Nightmare on Elm Street. So, yeah. And I'm following the movie. And then for no reason in the universe itself, all of a sudden he's in the real world and somehow they're killing him. I was like, wait. Rewind. Rules. Your universe rules. What? And that's why I don't get into horror. It's like, it makes no sense. Plus, you know, I watched, I'm looking at the screen to make sure Friday the 13th once. And I watched Jason go through. I'm like, are you kidding me? How do you not take this dude down? Well, he's supernatural. Really? That's the whole premise of the movie. I can't win because he's supernatural. No, I am more educated than that. I actually watched the TV show Supernatural, sir. I know fire and salt kills a whole lot of stuff. So I am not scared of Jason ever. I don't know. I don't like it.
Do we just kind of sit back and let the argument of Friday the 13th sucks because Supernatural is so awesome? Is that what it comes down to?
That was a long-winded rant to say, no, I never got into
horror. Never mind the fact that the roots of modern horror are derived from the 70s and 80s slasher films from an era where people didn't have TV shows like Supernatural. And, you know, a generation of, you know, the post-hippie, the peacenik, like people who just want to smoke grass and, you know, get some booty at a summer camp in the middle of nowhere.
I watched all the Jaws's and I was like, that was just cool. Go eat them, man. I was always on the monster side.
Don't ever say all the Jaws's and all that was Jaws's. Cool.
Yeah.
All the Jaws's.
We're going to need Jaws a bigger one. Boat for all this bullshit that Charles is shoveling right now. Jaws's. Oh my God.
No, there's like five. There's like at least three.
There's four. There's four, okay. And the revenge should have never happened. Jaws 3 should have happened, but the 80s was so big on 3D. Yeah. And in both Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 2, there were in-universe explanations as to how they pulled Freddy into the real world. I don't know what movie
Not the
you watched.
One I saw. I saw the reboot.
Yeah, you watched the garbage reboot. What did you expect?
Event Horizon was the same way. One, they didn't pitch it. They pitched it as sci-fi, not horror, which pissed me off. You can't shift gears like that mid-film. That's not
yes,
right.
Yes, you can when it's sci-fi horror.
Especially it's sci-fi horror. Exactly.
Alien.
That's the Alien. Alien is great. Alien is a great movie.
Is it a sci-fi movie or a horror movie? I see this alien running around on a spaceship. Am I supposed to be scared or amazed?
I'm amazed. I wasn't scared at all. You know, I thought that was badass. I wanted to grow up and be Predator. That's all I'm saying.
I just want to say that if every one of the Loot Crate reads this month is going to go like this, October 19th can't get here fast enough. We just had an advertiser derail our show.
It broke the panel, is what you're saying.
No, it's no gun in 60 seconds.
Yeah,
but...
I know.
Just go. Just done. You're fired.
You know something cool coming up on the horizon in a couple of years, or a little over a year and a couple months, is Star Wars Episode 8.
Wait, don't jump to a story yet. We got an email to play.
Oh, okay. Well, you didn't have that in the show notes, Jason Voorhees.
Wait, do you know who that is?
Jason Voorhees.
And this is why I don't like horror, because all of you are asshats. All right. Go ahead, carry on with your story.
Oh, for a guy who doesn't like horror, you sure stabbed this episode with a machete.
When he's wearing its face around and dancing in the moonlight.
That's like bloody comedy.
So Lupita Nyong'o was on Ellen the other day, and the topic of Star Wars Episode 8 came up. So Lupita Nyong'o played Maz Kanata in Episode 7, Force Awakens. The smuggler with the spectacles in that bar on the edge of the galaxy there. And she has announced that she has filmed her scenes for Episode 8, so we will be seeing more Maz Kanata. Presumably, you know, some sort of storyline that carries with Rey and learning the Force since that lightsaber was in the basement of Maz Kanata's bar. Probably going to be some sort of relation to that, but there's a confirmation that we are at least going to see that character again in Episode 8.
Good. I liked that character.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll get to do some more flirting with a Wookiee.
a little Maz on Chewie action.
I mean, if we're lucky, it'll be more than just flirting, right?
Yeah, Paul, you might need to borrow your soapbox.
Now this is turning into our horror right here. I just have to picture that. That's all I'm saying.
Charles, did I give you enough time?
Did you just ask to borrow my box? Like, by all means, sir, climb up.
No, I was saying that Maz might need to.
Oh, yeah.
To reach the Wookiee lips.
Now carry on. What about when is Rogue One come out? That's this year, right?
Next year,
yes,
December.
Or Rogue One, yeah.
Rogue One. Is everybody excited? Because it feels like the hype is kind of falling off, and that's only 2 months away, roughly.
I think the hype will be rekindled once it's like ready to be out.
Yeah,
exactly. And there was all that build up and hype for Star Wars because it had been 15 years or whatever it was since we had a Star Wars movie. Now we've got, we had one last year. So we're excited about this, but maybe not as excited as if it was a long drought before the next Star Wars movie.
Besides, we've got Doctor Strange between then and now. So settle
down. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to it. We got Luke Cage coming up in just a few days from this recording.
Hey, hey, quit jumping the gun, buddy. Quit jumping the gun. Just get your audio queued up. I'll do me.
Now, I will say about Rogue One, this is an interesting thing. It's bringing families together. My father is into a lot of cool movies. He likes the Star Wars stuff. Anytime he sees something like Civil War coming up, he goes, oh, yeah, you know, he wants to talk to me about it. He's into it. But he never wants to go opening weekend. He called me the other day going, hey, I know Rogue One's coming out soon. Do you want to, like, drive up to Athens where he lives and go with me? I'm like, who are you? Why the hell are you calling this number? You never call me to go to a movie with you because I always go opening weekend because we're going to do a panel about it, right? Typically. He doesn't. Nope. He wants to go opening weekend. I don't know what it is about Rogue One. Maybe that he grew up. I mean, he was our age or younger when Star Wars came out, and that was a huge thing for him, and that this is set in that same time period. But yeah, I got the phone call saying, come and watch it with me. So I'm going to do that. We'll make sure to go watch it with my daddy.
Cool.
I always bring the shows. I don't know why I bring the shows at a hall. You guys just let it hang.
Because you say weird stuff sometimes.
How's that? I'm sorry, Klotz. Did you not go to get to see it with your daddy?
When I refer to my father or my dad, I don't generally call him my daddy.
I think only Johnny Cash referred to his father as my daddy.
All right. I've got the audio here. Here we go.
So sitting here, I'm listening to your recent podcast, Breaking the Panel, and I have a question for you. You know, I'm not trying to troll anyone. I just... It jumped into my head, and I got to voice it. So, you know, the whole diversity thing. Let's say they came out with a movie next week with Meryl Streep starring in the starring role as Abraham Lincoln. And through the whole thing, they call her him and Abraham, and she wears dresses and doesn't dress anything like the part. But they just, you know... Would that be cool? Would, you know, and you know that somewhere along the line, someone's going to do something like that in the near future. The way things are going, they're going to. Someone's going to do it just to see what kind of reaction it will get. So let me ask you, do you think that is too diverse? Let me know your thoughts. Right on, guys. Love the show. Take care.
Thanks.
And that was former agent Super Stewie.
Thanks, Super Stewie.
Who's now Super Stewie. They actually did that. It was a movie, I want to say it's about Bob Dylan.
Right.
We had four different actors, Heath Ledger being one of them.
And Kate Blanchett being another one. It's called I'm Not There.
Yeah. Yeah. But to answer the question, is that too diverse? I don't know. I have seen that film.
And I thought it was a clever experiment. I don't know. It felt more like stunt casting. Certainly didn't feel like diversity. It felt more like stunt casting in a film that it's not like there was ever struggles with Bob Dylan's identity, and which would have made doing something like that relevant, right? I mean, make it relevant to the character. If you're going to change who plays that character and do these different roles, make it relevant to say, all right, he had a feminine side and we're going to explore that with Kate Blanchett. He had a such and such side and we're going to explore that with Heath Ledger, etc. It felt to me more like stunt casting, and it kind of distracted me from the rest of the film. Something like Meryl Streep as Abraham Lincoln, I feel like would be the same thing. It would be stunt casting for the purpose of stunt casting. It's not like, you know, we want to see what this role, you know, what Abraham Lincoln's explorations would have been as a woman. I think when you're doing biopics, it's the most difficult thing to try and do any sort of gender, nationality, age change. It's going to be very distracting for the audience. You want for a biopic, you want to be as representative possible to who that character is. Now, if it's Meryl Streep as Captain America, that's a whole different thing. You know, I mean, that's something that does kind of fall into that potential diversity line. Although, with everything that Marvel's doing right now, I can't see them jumping on something like that with the MCU. See them doing it in the comics, but not with the MCU. How about you guys?
Yeah, I think that when you're talking an actual historical figures, then yeah, I would agree with you. But if the actual question is just gender swapping, I would go back to how many years was Lady Macbeth played exclusively by men.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously no problem in women in gender swapping one direction. So I don't see why there would be a problem going the other way. But when you're talking about actual historical figures, yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You can't just swap the gender and nationality.
I don't know if you can fairly bring up the fact that Shakespearean plays in the Victorian era were all played by men as an argument for the present day. What? I mean, because that was
touché, sir.
Quite frankly,
why?
Several hundred years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
Kabuki theater.
As a society, we've come a long way as to what we consider to be appropriate behavior for men and women alike. And hopefully, you know, almost universally, we accept that as to be the right way to go and allow people to be themselves and everything. Yeah, I mean, that's like, I don't know, man. That just feels a little disingenuous to me to compare the two.
Okay.
So you're saying you would not watch dang it. I hate when I lose it like that. Melissa McCarthy is Genghis Khan. Got it. Just say it.
No, but like Melissa McCarthy and
No, I won't, because the gentleman who plays Genghis Khan and Marco Polo is so exceptional at it that I would be very upset if anybody else was cast as him.
I haven't seen that show yet. Is it good?
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
You have to like historical drama. If historical drama is not your thing, and I do recall that you've mentioned that it might be your thing in the past, you have to be into historical drama, because it's not really your Game of Thrones type of like where it's like crazy twists and action at all turns. There is a lot of that. I mean, in some ways it does share a lot of the same pedigree, but it is definitely rooted a little bit more in reality and a little less of the craziness, you know what I mean? So, and it's a little more brooding and plotting than something like Game of Thrones is, where it's very briskly paced for the most part. So.
No, I gotcha. I can definitely go with slower things. I might give it a shot. I looked interesting, and I haven't actually heard from anybody who has actually seen
it. Yeah, the first season was fantastic. I haven't caught up yet on the second season.
So very, very cool. I was trying to find any iTunes reviews we might have had for the show to see if there's anything worth reading, but I can't get it pulled up fast enough. So I will say, hey, go to iTunes for us and leave us a review. We'd love to have that up there. You can also find us at blogtalkradio.com/breakingthepanel. And it does not look like we have any.
For every 10 5-star reviews, we will enter the Charles is just going to periscope a truffle shuffle. You heard it here, folks.
And that's the thing right now. So people are like, hey, go give us 5-star reviews and we have this contest. And I'm like, well, you know, if that works, great. I don't know if we're going to do that.
I'm going to iTunes right now and I'm leaving a review.
I'm going to make so many accounts. That's right.
You know what, folks? On that note, everybody at home, you just kick back and relax, enjoy our shows, because we'll take care of this. We'll make this happen for you.
That's right. We got this.
You can, of course, find us at giantsizeteamup.com and patreon.com/breakingthepanel, where we can always use your support and your guidance on how to grow what we do and make it better for all of us going around. So go check that out while these guys spam the crap out of the iTunes reviews now. All right. So we mentioned last week it was near and dear to me because I like keeping up with The Flash, with The Arrow. I don't have cable. I've been a cord cutter for a very long time. Hulu was my jam. Right, I'd go there. I don't care if it's day after. Sometimes I'm 3 weeks behind, but I'll watch all three in one night. It doesn't matter. I could watch it on Hulu. I can't do that now. We talked about that last week with Netflix having the contract. We did some research. Ibbot actually, I think, led the charge, and Chris was right behind him. But we got the CW app. Of course, you can go to CW.com as well. And it seems to be the – of course, we don't know until the show comes on for sure, but definitely seems to be the issue that – you will get it on the app or on the website the day after, and you can still watch it through CW itself streaming. So that does look to be a nice legal option for you guys and girls to do that. And that's how I'm going to do it. I'll put the CW app on my tablet. It's not your TV. It's not, you know, it's the same as watching on Hulu, which I always watch through my either my Apple TV or my Roku box. But it will – and, of course, if you have Apple TV, you can just more or less – you know, AirPlay it to your TV if you
want. Exactly. Just share your iPad up to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was something that we wanted to follow up with for that. Are you guys, is this going to work for everybody? Are you still disappointed that CW went with the Netflix route? What?
Oh, it definitely works for me. Plus I have terrestrial, so I have the antenna and I get CW that way. So, Hulu, or not Hulu, but CW app will be a good backup if something goes wrong with the recording. But
for me personally, the free app, as long as it appears on there, basically as it does with Hulu, where it's available within the day or whatever, I'm content with that. However, I do still think it's a big mistake to pull it off Hulu, because I think you're going to lose a lot of your audience that way. I think, you know, the people on this show represent you know, your more tech savvy portion of the market, and we are a relatively small percentage of the overall market. You know what I mean? And I think that can particularly hurt a show like Supergirl, for example, whose kind of target audience is like your teen and up women as well as comic fans, you know what I mean? Or your teen and up women who are also comic fans. You know, I think they were reaching a demographic that a lot of these shows don't necessarily always hit. And they're going to lose a lot of those folks, I think, by just by, you know, not being on the normal outlet that it has been on for these couple of years. Well, not in the case of Supergirl, obviously, but now that they're all tied together. So we'll see how it all plays out. I am glad, though, that it currently appears that it'll all be available for free still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what the ads are going to be like on CW. I haven't done that far with the app yet to watch one of the shows and see how intrusive the ads are on the CW app, or if it's just going to be the same as it was on Hulu.
Right. We'll definitely keep you up to date, because that's how I plan on following Flash, Arrow, mm-hmm. Supergirl, all that stuff. And of course, we did mention, and we'll mention again, Supergirl is on Netflix. You can binge watch the first season right now. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm actually been enjoying it, but has everybody watched the Red Tornado show episode?
Literally just watched it recently.
I haven't, but feel free to spoil away.
Well, it's not really spoilers. I feel like if I complain, it might spoil it for you as far as experience. But I felt like this was my major complaint with knowing the show was on CBS. It was very standard writing. Oh, the big bad military is going to come in and they don't like the alien. Oh, look, the big bad military made a robot that kills people specifically to have her fight it to see what she could do. And now the robot flew off and now the big bad military blames her for it. I was like, God, this show's just kind of, this episode makes me want to just skip to the next. I watched it all. It was fine. They kind of brought it back around. But I was like, oh, yeah, let's go down that 1980s route of the military blames everybody but themselves and fires everybody but themselves. And somehow Supergirl takes that on as her own responsibility, because somehow it was her fault that the killer robot was built by them and she accidentally thought she broke it and she didn't. You know, I was like,
so are you just mad because DeNozzo and Gibbs didn't figure out what went wrong?
No, I was mad at the writing, because I like smart television. And I'm not saying Arrow is always smart television or Flash, but I just hate that standard standby of, oh, all of a sudden we're going to bring in this one antagonist that blames everybody and they can get away with it because they have the authority of the president. If you care to check it, call him. You know, it's like,
No, to be fair, though, of the four shows in the Berlantiverse, that's the only one that's done it. I mean, Arrow has touched on the government and black ops in the government, you know, because of Amanda Waller and her organization, Argus. But like they haven't dealt with the military directly. But the military is a big part of what's been done with Superman in the cinematic universe. You know, it was a big part of both films, how the military interacted with Superman. So being that they're not, you know, obviously they're not directly tied to each other. They've made that clear. I think they're trying to establish a link between a similar story, you know, that the military perceives these Kryptonians as huge threats. And so they're going to get involved and they're going to test their technology against them, you know.
And you could do that. It wasn't that. It was just the way it was. I don't know. Maybe I took a personal offense to it. It's just the way it was. Oh, we hate you, and now we're going to test you against this thing. And, oh, look, you broke our toy that's going to go and kill everybody, and it's your fault because you broke it. It's like, oh, shut up. You built the damn thing.
It's too formulaic for you, which I understand that argument.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what I'm saying.
Everything under the sun has already been done, so at some point, like, that's my problem when I hear shows talk about tropes. Oh, that was very tropey. Well, that's because everything's been done. So at some point, you're going to find a precedent for what a show's doing, whether it's innovative or not. And at some point, somebody's going to be guilty of being tropey. It's, unfortunately, it's the nature of limited options for stories, well, I guess.
But. So, Chris, let me ask you, as someone who serves in the military, does that kind of plot line resonate with you at all? Like, does it make you feel a certain way do you feel that it's fairly representative of like military bureaucracy?
Bureaucracy, yes, to a certain degree, but there's so many different departments and mm-hmm. other, I mean, interest groups within the military. Like, I would have no idea to be able to tell you for sure either way that that doesn't exist or that does exist. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Well, I just mean the general attitude of, you know, a commanding officer like that, a general uh-huh. comes in and he's not used to getting any pushback kind of thing. You know what I mean? That's
kind of... You're asking me if I think it's completely plausible that a general
right.
be a jackwall.
Never mind. Don't answer that question. I don't want to.
And then blame others around sudden, him when he was on the wrong side of something. Yes. Yes, absolutely. That is...
And then tomorrow Chris gets busted down.
poor Chris. So that was all. I will say it has absolutely gotten better from the first episode. I just finished the Red Tornado the other night. So it's definitely getting better. I am enjoying it. I'm liking the fact that she has to figure out the adjustment to life, that she has to figure out basically on her own how to deal with her powers and the diversity between the story we know of Superman growing up with the family as a baby, them instilling all these values in him, so on and so forth, to her essentially being on her own, not ever playing with him, not ever using her powers. And now she's Supergirl. And now she not only has to figure out who she is and what she's doing, she also has people who love her and people who hate her mm-hmm. actively coming at her, and people who are devious coming at her. You know, it's, I like what they're doing with the show.
She holds human life in such a high esteem. It makes me wonder why the guy that was raised by a loving family would have such a disregard for it. I don't understand.
Now, Charles, have you gotten far enough to have... I don't think you have. Because there's a big reveal a couple episodes down the road if you've just seen Red Tornado.
Yeah, no, I've just seen Red
Tornado. Because there's a certain firefighter we know who has a relative that makes an appearance. And I'm being not subtle at all here.
Travis Jones!
And that was a big surprise to me.
No, I already knew about that. Okay. We won't.
I'm not going to elaborate in case anybody out there who's listening doesn't know what I'm hinting at. I don't want to ruin it for you, but I was blown away. Like, I started to suspect it, like, in that episode. Like, I kind of put two and two together a little bit earlier than they were telegraphing it. And I was like, oh my God, this is cool. Like, I got super excited. Like, I literally fist pumped, double fist pumped up in the air. I was like, yes, 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 as it happened. So I hit Chris up immediately on Facebook. I was like, dude, you know, I love that. I love a lot of what Supergirl is doing. And I like that it's representing the genre and the audience is trying to hit fairly, too. Which is so ridiculous that it was a CBS show, because it was absolutely a CW show from the beginning.
Right.
You know, it's definitely aimed at a younger, generally female audience. At least, you know, it's meant to appeal to them. But there's definitely a lot there for your average comic book fan, your average, you know, just anybody who's interested in a good story. It's there. One of my big concerns is that she would come across as very whiny and needy. And even though she is often overwhelmed by her emotions and overwhelmed by all of the weight on her shoulders, it never really comes across as super whiny or overdramatic, at least not to me. So
that season and the way it played out, that was why I was so upset when it wasn't Tom Welling that was Superman, that was going to announce to be Superman, because that is such a spiritual successor to Smallville. In all the good and bad points of that show, that he would have been the perfect choice for the Superman on that show, but we went to MTV.
Yeah, well,
I've never seen Smallville.
You've never seen Smallville? All the way until the Justice League starts showing up. So, like, the first four or five seasons, definitely skip the entire first season. Just not.
I don't know. I watched it in order at the time, so this is going from the memory of the 90s, but I actually liked it up until about season 7. Then it got too out there for me, and I stopped watching it.
It was too Dawson's Creek for me. I just couldn't get into it at all.
Yeah.
But then once I started introducing other characters and having Justice League guys in, I was like, okay, well, I'll give it a try again.
to circle back to Supergirl real quick, I wanted to talk about Calista Flockhart's character and how in the first couple episodes I loathed her and I wanted her to go away forever. And then by the middle of the season, which is where I'm at right now, my feelings on that changed quite a bit. And I think they did a pretty good job with that, because that doesn't happen very often. Like, characters don't get redeemed for me very often, and it happens, so.
Well, can't wait to see that, because that's the issue that I had with the first few episodes. So that's an aspect that I'm glad to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, before we get to the end of this, we have some bills to pay. You know how this goes. Please stick around. We've got an ad to put in here right now. And then we'll be back with two stories from Chris himself, bringing some excitement stuff and putting me in my place. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And Luke Cage comes out Friday. So there, I spoiled it for you. What did you got, Chris?
All right, so first, talking about... from a few episodes ago and even today, talking about how you introduce new ideas into stories and stuff that we're all familiar with. Marvel, in the latest, in the Mighty Thor number 11, so I don't want to ruin anything for anybody that hasn't read it yet, but they've introduced a new power for Mjolnir. And as we all know, Mjolnir is the hammer of Thor. And actually, they've introduced two new powers. Jane Foster, as we all know, Jane Foster is Thor at this point, and she is shot in her Thor form, and she has to remove the bullet, but she doesn't have a surgeon around her, so she creates one through Mjolnir. Mjolnir creates a double of Jane Foster and says, what you know, I know, so put it inside. Well, let me rephrase.
But this is, this is not Supergirl season 2 poster material
so
here.
Mjolnir essentially makes a duplicate of Jane Foster. She imparts her surgical knowledge on this double, and then the double is able to remove the bullet from her. So we didn't know that Mjolnir was able to make tangible doubles of its bearer, of Thor. But not only that, the thing that I find more interesting is that Mjolnir spoke to her. So they're suggesting a certain sentience to Mjolnir that's never been explored before. I think that's the more interesting development of this story. So what do you guys think of a sentient Mjolnir?
Well, it would explain why it's always coming back to Thor. Don't throw me away. I'm coming back.
Baby, come back.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
But definitely, it's a different take on the character and his power set. That's
her
power set. Absolutely.
Please use the proper gendered pronouns, sir.
Well, and see, and I feel like the pronoun should be a they, and they show an image from it again of whosoever holds this hammer, if she be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. And I don't even know when it changed, because I know people like to quote it as he, but I know for the longest time it's been they. That it's been whosoever holds this power, if they be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor.
Right.
And I don't know that you need to shrink that to say she, unless you're...
To a single person, right?
Unless
you've got your Beta Ray Bill, you've got your Don Blake.
Hammer,
right.
But, you know, what if you have a gender fluid person? Is it depending on what their feeling is that day is what the inscription will say? But anyway, I digress. When I first read the article, I was like, oh man, this is turning into 1960 Superman. They're just whatever power he needs that month, they're going to give it to him.
Right.
But as long as they don't do it that way, this could be something cool. That maybe Odin wasn't as involved in the power behind Mjolnir as we thought. So.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I guess I have to see how it's treated in the comics, because it lessens Thor's power to me if you give Mjolnir sentience, if you make it have its own intelligence instead of it just being a weapon. It's like all of a sudden you give Captain America's shield speaking lines. It just seems like it takes away from, all right, Thor's doing all this and he, you know, throws the hammer really hard and that's what makes him actually fly. It's yanking him up and stuff like that. Them.
Yeah. Them. Yeah.
I'm picturing what Captain America's shield would say, and it's cracking me up right
Ow!
Now.
Ow!
No, it's like,
bing, bing.
Whoa, boy, you sure do have a strong grip there, Cap. What's up?
Captain America's shield would say,
yeah.
And it would always end with, you didn't see that coming. And then the other thing is, you know, that it's not really a story, but panel breakers, we have failed our community. I can't believe we didn't discuss this earlier, but
oh, no.
All premiere dates.
Are you going to shoot me in the chest with the arrow now?
Well, yes, you for sure. No. All premiere dates. We didn't talk about it all. So we're behind. We're behind. You know, so obviously we've already had Big Bang, Gotham, Lucifer, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wait. Big Bang does not fall under the purview of breaking the panel.
It should, because I know we've got people out there that watch it. I know.
Some of the characters, okay. Some of the characters wear comic shirts, I guess, right?
All right.
American Horror Story, Z Nation.
What's Z Nation?
Z Nation, it's on Sci-Fi. It's, you know, like a zombie show. Star Wars Rebels has started back up. So the stuff that we've got coming out now, like somebody on this show said already, because he likes to, you know, steal other people's thunder. Because the rock god of podcasting doesn't make thunder, he just steals it.
Oh, wow.
On September 30th, Luke Cage is going to premiere, and that leads into that whole first week of October where we're going to get Westworld, Ash versus Evil Dead season 2, Flash, Arrow, and then leading into that following the next week, Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow, which I kind of found that interesting, that I guess CW wants is staggering by a week instead of giving it to you all in 1 week. They're just going to give us the tip. But
just Paul, for a little while.
But Paul, you'll be excited, I know. October 21st, Black Mirror season 3. What?
Yeah.
And The Walking Dead is back on October 23rd. AMC comes back with its Sunday night beatdown on every other network with The Walking Dead, Talking Dead, and Comic Book Men. And then I'm hoping one of you guys is as excited as me, but October 28th, that this isn't really a geek thing per se, but Tracy Ullman's got a new show starting on HBO.
Oh, really? Wow.
So maybe we'll get,
hadn't heard about this at all. Like a sketch comedy show?
All I saw, it says Tracy Ullman's show. So maybe we'll get more crappy Simpsons.
You know what I'm really excited about is on this list here, I see on September 6th, Game of Homes premiered on Discovery Family Channel. Man, when you play the Game of Homes.
I know. Who dies? That's who dies?
Yeah. I just feel
drywall is coming.
Take the black, put on the drywall. Oh, man, I might have just implied something I didn't mean to. That's horrible. Yeah, so how is that not... Oh, my God.
Lannister always pays his Home Depot bill.
How does a name like that make it live? Like, how does... I understand it probably starts out as a joke. Some intern somewhere is like, let's call it Game of Homes. And then some executive's like, yeah, let's. And they're like, no, I wasn't serious. Oh, this got away from me.
Are you looking forward to the new house flipping show that's going to be coming HGTV called The Flipping Dead?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know if you mentioned South Park. South Park's back.
Oh, yeah, South Park is back. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's last week. And it's people are saying great things about the start off episode that is very relevant to things that are going on in the real world that we don't talk about on this show. But because, you know, we talk about the fake worlds because sometimes the real world is so scary you have to retreat into your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of exciting stuff. Oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back. Has everybody,
seen that?
Yeah. Yes.
You said it. Like, let's talk about it briefly.
Oh, okay.
Has everybody seen the first episode?
Yes.
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 Okay. Because the reason I ask is because we were speculating on it quite a bit in the last episode, and they kind of jumped right into the Ghost Rider thing, which was really interesting.
Right.
And
which they needed to do. I mean, the show so desperately needed a shot in the arm. Mm-hmm. And if they were going to slow play Ghost Rider and we didn't see him until a third of the way into the season, I think they would have lost so many viewers just in the first few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because they spoiled him ahead of time. You know, if he had randomly appeared a little bit in, that might have been one thing. You know, they might have gotten away with that. But yeah, no, right. he's there right away and he's not pulling punches, man. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't know how they were going to handle him on an ABC show, you know what I mean? And he is brutal, and I love it.
Yeah. Well, and you can't bury the Ghost Rider lead when there's a possibility that Mr. Bernthal might be appearing on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that rumor as well.
So. Yeah, that is a bit of a rumor. Which will fly in the face of what, you know, what some of the word has come out of various camps about the nature of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the rest of the MCU content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as I've reported a few times in the past, some of them have done interviews where they've said it's very much like they're an island of their own. You know, the folks on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they don't feel very much camaraderie with the rest of the MCU. There's really no interaction. It's, you know, which is unfortunate. I think that's, you know.
Yeah, we got an Enchantress appearance first season or second half of the first season. Sif. And, of course, Sif, right, exactly. I don't think it's me speaking out of school to say that I did speak to Jerry Conway about this, and he's unaware. And I would think that he'd be involved, but he's unaware of any Punisher involvement with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So take that for what it's worth. I think that cements it more as just rumor and nothing.
Yeah, because I think the article I saw was just something about shooting schedules and being somewhere. So
right, exactly.
Yeah,
Barenthal's just making an appearance at a kid's birthday party. That's get back in the house, kids.
I mean, you know, it's not a terrible idea to bring some of these guys in briefly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, definitely not. Anything you can do to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to kind of integrate it more into the network or into the MCU, because it feels like it's this lone little island.
Mm-hmm.
And it got a season four, I think. I think, you know, some of those stars have right to say, hey, you know, we're doing things over here and we're holding our own, but it would be nice to get a little help from the head office.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, that's a thing. We're talking about a show that's gone almost as many years as, you know, like Marvel's Avengers Alliance did, you know what I mean? Which, you know, so it ties into the main stuff, you know, it does. It absolutely is threaded. I mean, Coulson came out of the Avengers film, you know, that's how we got this. But I really think, I think there's opportunity there. Like, what I would love to see is something like have Daredevil show up in an episode when they're in New York City. Even if they don't, like, get into it, you know, he appears, you know, there's some involvement, there's some brief dialogue, and then they move on. Because the, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is pretty fast-paced as far as that goes. They pop in and out of places. That would absolutely lend some credibility to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and give them some legs, I think, and get people excited.
Well, see, and that's why Punisher, because Punisher left New York. He's out traveling around. So he drives up to a scene where Ghost Rider's straight murdering some thugs, and then he just, like, either tips the hat or be like, well, that'll happen, and then drives off in the battle van.
I kind of want it to be a little more involved in that. Like, I want them to team up, and I want to see, like,
I want murders at 10 o'clock on ABC.
Well, we're getting them. I mean, come on, Ghost Rider's here, man. Yep. I want to see the battle van and this charger barreling down a highway after some bad guys, even if it's just one episode and just for, like, part of it. All right?
Who gets to kill him?
I don't think that's unreasonable. No, I want them to take down a relatively, like, a mid-level baddie and just, like, do it together and have it be awesome. And, you know, then Punisher tips his hat and goes his merry way and goes on to his, you know, new solo show, which will be amazing.
I got ninjas to shoot.
Now, you know, his line would be something stupid cheesy like, get a light.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that.
I don't know what to think of the first episode, because it definitely felt different than the previous two seasons, which I liked. Like, okay, I could tell there's a difference here. It felt some of the danger drama, especially at the beginning, felt a little forced because I was so used to the old version of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The shaky cam can go. I don't feel like that's necessary.
I didn't
necessary.
Even notice it, really.
It wasn't huge, but like when May was doing the fight, the training scene with everybody, and she wraps her leg and does a throw with the guy, the camera goes with them. Like, it's all right. It's not edgy. It's just there. It's fine. my wife did say she watched it with her. And she doesn't really care for Daisy or Sky, you know, because she's just like, it just gets old. And you see the whole scene of her suiting up, basically, which they start with edgy, right? We get to see her butt in underwear. That's the opening scene of the show. I was like,
I actually thought that was a little bit out of character for them. I thought they moved away from that.
Agreed.
Because they sexualized her a bit in the first season, mm-hmm. and then they just haven't, you know, for the most part.
Right. But then on top of that, she says she's watching the Ghost Rider thing. I didn't even notice because I'm watching how cool the graphics actually turned out to be. The graphics turned out pretty decent. And I was watching the opening scene with Ghost Rider, and then she's back to Sky and or Daisy, and she's apparently got her mascara smudged. My wife goes, "Oh, she put on all that time to get her mascara right. Look, it's all smudged." And that set the tone for the whole show after that. It's like, thanks for ruining things, babe. I love you. So, but it was fun. It was a little bit different. There were some cinematic missteps, in my opinion, from what I'm used to with the show and how good they are on details. They missed some small, but to me, large details.
Like what?
The first thought I had that wasn't going to voice it, my wife actually voiced, was, oh, what, with that whole facility, the only place you can train is where the airplane lands? And that's actually really dangerous because there's a whole lot of backwash and, you know, your eyeballs will get ripped out. So you probably shouldn't train right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of them. The other was the guy in the hospital. Typically, they're really good about taping tubes in places. That dude wasn't hooked up to anything. You know, it became so apparent to me because he rolled out of bed with the bleeding spot, and you're supposed to be so focused on him talking about he burns your soul and the growing blood patch on his chest that I couldn't help. I was like, wait a minute, why is that machine beeping? He's got nothing hooked to him. It just took me out of the scene. It wasn't bad. It was my thing. I was like,
I didn't catch that, but now that you've pointed it out, if I watched it again, it would drive me crazy, I'm sure.
I apologize for everybody.
No, I normally catch that stuff like that. I mean, that is definitely the kind of stuff that I catch. You're right, though. I think they were hoping that the penance there would be enough to just get away with a little quickie scene like that. That's unfortunate. And the training thing stood out to me too, because I was like, oh, that's a bad green screen shot, and it makes no sense. Like, I was like, what? Okay.
Yeah, from a person who's actually had to guide in helicopters and land them, I know that you don't stand there and stare directly at the machine that is doing all the backwash on you. You know, that's not safe. I don't know. But the rest of it actually was decent. I liked Mac and Coulson's relationship. I liked May and Coulson's relationship. I liked what they did with Gemma. And I don't want to, for those who hadn't seen, I don't want to dive in too much. I liked a lot of the follow-ups to the previous seasons and catching us up on what's going on. I found it. Did you guys find it interesting that not even in passing did they mention that S.H.I.E.L.D. is out in the open? It just, we assume because of the Accords that they're out. I mean, we know they're out in the open now, but we know because we studied it. But from average TV watchers, do you think that they missed a step in not mentioning that?
I think that the people who are fans of the MCU and who saw Civil War and understand the whole situation with the Accords and the split and, you know, Tony in and Cap out kind of thing, I think they'll notice that sort of thing. I think for everybody else, it'll just kind of wash by them and won't be integral to the story right away. And maybe it'll pick up later on if that does become important.
So what do you guys think of? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charles.
I was gonna say I don't think it was super integral, other than we know why Coulson's on missions and why he's still hidden, because he's quote unquote dead in the universe still, and we know that there's a new director, even though they haven't revealed the director yet. But I don't think it's that big of a plot point that people will worry about it. I was just curious what you thought.
What do we all think of the weird science subplot we've got going on right now?
You got to see where this goes. I mean, if it turns into just another, oh no, AI is going to become sentient and going to be like taken over, then I'm bored with that nonsense. But I still
find it kind of remarkable how they just let him get away with everything at the end of the last season. Like, that doesn't seem real world to me at all. No, they're trying to create some drama in saying that he's got a lot of stipulations and he's monitored and, you know, he's got to report his research and everything. But, like, come on. Who trusts that guy? You know what I mean? Yeah. He was responsible for a lot of people dying horrifically.
Yeah.
Like, not your run-of-the-mill, I'm a mad scientist. Like, not your typical Reed Richards, oops, I got people killed. But, like, your, oh, I got people gooified.
Yeah.
Killed. You know what
but
I mean? His,
but, and not that it lends credibility to it, but, I mean, his was not so much, like, he wasn't a criminal mastermind about it. His was more, and it's funny that you say Reed Richards, because that's, to me, that's what it's like. It's, he did it for the knowledge or to prove that he could do it, not not because he was, there's any gain for him necessarily. The gain was just,
the pursuit
was
of there,
but it wasn't the main reason. He was doing it for the science of it. So I'm just, I'm happy because, I mean, that's, it's your LMDs have now finally entered the MCU. That's, I mean, that's,
oh, there you go. That is how they could,
well,
cause you know.
Cause in that, what it, at the end of last season, yes, that's what it said, was LMD program initiating or something.
Yes.
So, right. Yeah.
See, I don't care for that. Cause that means we're going to get a lot more of the copycat BS that we were getting before, you know, where, that's not really them. Okay. Everybody's not who they are. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, well, this person didn't just really die. It was an LMD.
And it's going to get done at clutch points in the storyline, and it's going to get done more than once, and it's going to get tired if they go down. I mean,
welcome,
I could be wrong.
Shield, man.
What's that?
But welcome to life at S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. It's just, it's one of those plot devices that drives me crazy. It's like, you fool me once, you know what I mean? And the first time it'll be like, oh, and then we'll be like, oh. But that's the thing. The first major death that we see now, we're going to be like, it's an LMD. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then whether it is or not, though, you know what I mean? It's going to be like, we're just going to assume that. So the drama is not going to be as strong for us. You know, there's not as much risk when this can happen, when just about anybody can be saved, you know, wand waved out of a crappy situation by, you know, that mechanic, that story mechanic. So we'll see. But it's, we'll see.
Hey, so I don't mean to pull us off the AOS train. But I kind of wanted to go back to what I talked about last week with Gotham.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Okay, after watching this newest episode, and I read an article earlier, and Charles, I'm just going to, because I know the boys quoted it too. So Ben, so the guys over at DC on screen, Ben McKenzie has been quoted with saying that the Jim Gordon that you get in this show is likely to be a different character than you're used to. So there's speculation right now that maybe he'll be Joker or something, right? I think they need to just go for the easy play and make Jim Gordon Batman.
Oh, wow.
And because at this point, if they don't, then Batman's, his paradox has always been, is evil here? Am I here fighting evil? And is it creating more evil? So in the weapons of mass destruction scale of crazy, is Batman being there what creates all these supervillains in Gotham City? And now what you have is you have all of these super criminals are creating Batman, but I'd almost like to see a more psychological thing to like a straight dissociative problem with Bruce. So say Bruce Wayne or Jim Gordon is the proto Batman. And then Bruce Wayne grows up to be Batman still, based on what Jim Gordon has done.
What?
Prior to.
What if they went a completely, and this is crazy, this is just speculation.
Put it on the table.
It's not going to happen, but what if they went the route of flipping the mode and Jim becomes Batman, but Bruce turns dark?
Well, like, and they've got the second Bruce, too, so that...
Right, we've got alternate Bruce.
Yeah.
Right, and well, I mean, imagine, like, maybe that's something we're working up to. What if Alfred doesn't make it out of the season? What if there's this horrific betrayal where, like, this long-haired Bruce that we don't know anything about yet ends up tricking him into a false sense of security, and then Alfred dies, literally dies.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So one set of deaths makes Bruce good, Mm-hmm. Another set of deaths makes him turn like mm-hmm. You get one set of deaths makes him Batman, two sets of deaths makes him the Joker.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Two negatives make a really negative. Right. Yeah.
It's got to be even or odd numbers, not even numbers.
Yeah. You know, it was said that the Joker was talking to Batman and said, "Hey, what strolls down an alley and is full of holes?" And Batman starts to cry, like, "My parents." And Joker's like, No, I'm in a bowling ball, man. Bowling ball.
Sorry. Too dark, Bruce. Too dark.
Yeah. Too soon. Damn, dude, you really are dark.
One thing I wanted to mention real quick, because I caught up on the last like four or five episodes right before I watched the new episode for Gotham. Mm-hmm. I loved how they did Azrael. Like, that was super fun. Mm-hmm. I also love how they put it to rest too, in the most triumphant way.
All over the place.
Yeah. Oh my god. I love Butch. Like, Butch is such a fun character, and he has come such a long way. You know, you want to talk about the journey of a character over a series, and this series is still young. I mean, what is this, third season now? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he has gone through so much over the two seasons leading into this, and for him to just have a moment like that was so glorious. And fun. And I just laughed like a maniac. It was great. I'm loving it. I really like what they're working up to here. I like how everything's starting to move much faster. Because one of the issues I was having when I stopped watching last season was I felt like the pace had slowed to a crawl. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, those last five episodes were like lightning paced. Like, you know, mm-hmm. Hugo's just going to town. All the, you know, he's firing up the villain factory and like, crap's getting real, you know what I mean? And so like I'm excited to see where they go. And now that we've talked about some alternate theories here, I really hope they do something crazy. And and so they can really distance themselves from the traditional Batman universe and just say, "Hey, listen, you know, we know you thought we were just building the prequel story, if you will, but no, we're actually telling a different story. We're telling our version of a different sequence of events that leads to a different outcome."
Absolutely.
That would be amazing.
And the other thing that I've liked about the season is I've always been a Fish Mooney fan. I don't understand the people that hate her. Like, I get where you can maybe not like her. You say she overacts. But to me, when you say that, I immediately think of Frank Gorshin and Cesar Romero. And I'm like, but why are they so loved?
Well, because that was a campy show. This is trying to be a serious show with a – I'm on the side of I think Jada Pinkett chews up the scenery in every scene she's in. But mm-hmm.
But her moment with Penguin on this most recent episode.
Last night's episode?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Was so
good. Oh, I haven't seen this one
was
yet.
Was so good. And I really, it made me like that character even more.
Well, on that note, we do have to get out of here because we've hit the hard stop for me. But lots of great conversation. Lots of great new TV to talk about, guys. We got lots of films, TV, all kind of great stuff coming up in the next coming weeks. It's going to be amazing. But again, go fill out a review for us in iTunes and go to giantsizeteamup.com and subscribe to the show. Patreon.com/breakingthebattle. You know, it's going to have to be a whole lot more than just five-star reviews on iTunes.
I know. That's why I said 10.
If people need to go to Patreon and start pledging, you want the truffle shuffle, man. You have to.
We can absolutely make that a pledge goal. I mean,
No.
You did writing.
Let's get it down on paper.
All right. Well, tune in next week to hear Paul Klotz say. Yeah, that's about what we expect.
If we hit $100 on Patreon, Charles will do the dance from Silence of the Lambs. And you know what dance I'm talking
about. There you go.
Now you're just trying to watch the world burn, man.
Oh, my God.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.